Hi, I'm Kelly Shan and this is my podcast, Life Journey. I hope you find some inspiration and happiness for your own life in the words and experience from my guests. This episode is proudly brought to you by Interpath, the joint health experts. Foresight joint supplements keep your animal's joints in top shape and Interpath even has Osteo Restore for you. If you'd like to find out more, head to www.interpath.global or ask at your local vet. Julie Cross's Facebook page describes her as a passionate speaker and inspirational entertainer who brings a message of hope and empowerment. I heard Julie speak in 2014 and still remember much of her message from all those years ago, which for me is a miracle in itself. I was privileged to sit down with Julie last year before she headed out to Mount Isa and Julia Creek, where she so generously gave her time to those communities who were impacted by last year's monsoon event. I thought it would be great to have a catch up with Julie now to see how things have been going for her during COVID. Julie, hello. Thank you for coming on and joining me this morning. It's so good to see you again.
Oh, it's great to be here with you, Kelly. Thank you. And this is the new seeing you now, isn't it? It's almost like since COVID, this is what we call seeing you through Zoom. I know.
Aren't we lucky, though, that COVID has happened in this age when we do have the benefit of Zoom and any video calling? And because imagine if we didn't have all these apps and things at our disposal, we would have all been much more isolated.
Absolutely. So no, very grateful for that.
Yeah. Well, Julie, I just, if you could just give a brief synopsis about what you do and your life, just in case there might be one or two people out there who don't know what you do, although I do find that.
I'm not that famous, Kelly. There's probably more than one or two.
Well, you're very famous to me.
thank you. Well, thank you very much. And I'm sure there's lots of people that I haven't met yet, and I'm looking forward to meeting one day. So my name's Julie Cross, and I refer to myself as an inspirational entertainer, but perhaps other people would call me a motivational speaker or inspirational speaker. So primarily speaking is what I do, and then writing as well. So I speak at corporate events, at all styles of different events, and then I also do my own public events. So pretty much anyone that's having a conference that might say, you know, we need someone to energise the audience, to perhaps have them reflecting on their own personal development, taking personal responsibility, waking up their resilience and their courage and their fearlessness. That'd be kind of my genre of speaking. You know, that'd be the person that I'd get the phone call for, perhaps that kind of style of speaking. And so I then do my own, as I said, my own public events. So where I sell tickets to the general public to come along to one of my shows. And there are a variety of shows too. We've had the family show, we've had the mothers and daughters event, we've had the building resilience for families event where families would come along and we'd all talk everything resilience. And last year we had the adults only show, which was a fun show based on humour and how important the power of laughter is. So that's a little bit of what I do.
And Julie, you come from a place of great experience when you speak of courage and resilience, because you lost your beautiful husband Flash when your two boys were very small, and plus one of your sons, Thomas, lives with autism. So you haven't had things easy in your life, but you live your life with the greatest sense of humour and positivity, and that's what you impart in your shows and in your speaking engagements.
Thank you. Yes, it has been a journey. And I think the thing is, Kelly, that what we learn, and I guess what I've learned and what I try to share now, is that we will all have a story. You know, we will not avoid the story. And I think that if we would just firstly relax and just know that we will all have a story. So I think that sometimes that we create great anxiety and stress for ourselves in thinking that life going well and all being perfect means that there's no pain or that there's no grief or that there's no challenges. You know, that in fact is not living a life. That's flatlining. You know, life does actually look like this when life is, it's living. You know, that's what a heartbeat looks like, you know. So that is life. And so, yes, and some of us get our journey, I guess, you know, all at once, which is kind of how it felt for our family, that we sort of seemed to feel like we had so much happen all at once. And humour helped and faith and trust. But believe me, I didn't always do it well. It didn't always look good either. And I think that's the other thing, is it would become attached to life looking kind of like Instagram picture perfect. But it was messy. And even in messy, you just have to keep going. You know, messy means progress. Messy can still mean that you're making it. Messy can still mean that you find some joy in amongst that. Because, yeah, my worst of times, I look pretty bad. But we've come through to, you know, some of the best of times now.
Yeah. Yeah, no one lives an Instagram life, do they? Everyone has their ugly parts. So, Julie, tell me how you've been going through COVID, because everybody's COVID experience is different. And I know you live in a beautiful unit and you have the most beautiful view. But how have things been going for you, you know, professionally and personally?
Yeah, well, I was reflecting on this before we spoke, because I know that you mentioned that perhaps talking about that today. And, of course, that is the topic on everybody's lips. And you're right, we all landed in this pandemic in different places. You know, there were people that whose work ramped up. And, you know, and one of the things I guess we all noticed from that, and suddenly that we were celebrating some of these essential services that perhaps haven't been honoured in the past. And I think that's wonderful. Suddenly our frontline supermarket workers and our truck drivers delivering all of our produce and our food became our heroes, our nurses, our teachers. So, you know, those people, I guess, continued to work, but they had great stress placed on them. I landed it in a place, like many other people too, where our work just went overnight. You know, pretty much in one weekend, you know, I was at a speakers conference, which was interesting that I happened to be, we happened to have that conference at that weekend, but pretty much our phones were all going off with everything cancelling. So overnight, the speaking industry, the corporate and events industry, of course, just stopped. So, you know, suddenly my work just wasn't there anymore. And so, you know, you go through that thing, which I guess we all have done, is that fear, you know, that fear of is suddenly, you know, you feel, oh my God, there's a pandemic, we're all going to die and I haven't got any money either. And then it was like, oh no, now relax, stay in the moment. And then suddenly all that stuff that I teach, you know, of course, comes to the forefront. But, you know, something that I reflected on was that it did feel like I could draw from my past experiences. And I think sometimes we forget that we can do this, that we've often all gone through events where we've had to show courage and trust and faith and belief in ourselves, and we've gotten back up. And when my husband had his stroke, you know, one of the things that I learned through that time, and you would have heard me talk about this before, is that nobody could give me a date on a calendar when he would be better. So there was this moment that I realized, well, when do I get to be happy again? If there's no date that they can give me where my husband will be better, this is when your life will be normal and you can be happy again, Julie. So I really learned that I had to find the happiness in amongst our new situation, because I can't wait for that date because there is no date. And that's what it was like when COVID first hit. There was no date for us, and there still really isn't, but we can see the light now, I think. But there was no date that this was going to get better. How much worse was it going to get? And so when do I get to be happy again? When do I get to feel, you know, remove that fear and feel, allow myself some joy and happiness in this? And so I kind of went through all of that and reflected on that and realized, well, you know, this is a gift of time. You know, this is a gift of time that has been given, where I do not have to go anywhere. In fact, you're being told not to. So you can sit home and, you can let your breath out. You can relax and you have to just trust and have faith that it will all work out okay in some way. And so I kind of went through that process. That doesn't mean the fear didn't drop again. Oh my gosh, I'm going to throw all my house and money and I'm never going to work. Oh, relax, grab that self-talk, muscle up mentally, do those things you talk about, read something positive, turn off the news, you know, because I think that that's the other thing, is that through this time of fear, we underestimate the power of all of that constant negativity, that constant fear, and the assault it has on all of our senses. It assaults us physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And so I think that that's why we can feel fatigued through this. And so we have to be aware of that. And so turning off the news, backing away from it, staying in touch with what I can control and letting the rest go. So, you know, a lot of good time to practice all of that healthy thinking.
So, Julie, what about Thomas? So Thomas is your youngest boy who lives with autism. So how did he cope with it? Because he had a really great little business going, Thomas Kent Ken, so he would have had to stop all that. So how did Thomas cope with it all?
Well, initially, it was very upsetting for Thomas because it was also meant a change in his routine, because that thing of, in the city here, we were being pulled over if it was not essential travel. And, so I was sort of saying to him, you can't also be driving around because he had just got his independence and he loved having his independence and his car. And with autism, we know when we change their routine and structure and they place all of these, new rules on them, there goes through a time of anxiety and stress. So, he couldn't do his work anymore because, we didn't want him to be going in people's homes and that extra responsibility, and they often didn't want us in there either. So that was fine. But, once again, clever universe, thank you, things to be grateful for. There was an opportunity that came up where he got some work in a laundry because it's an essential service. They were doing all of the hospital and all of those, all their laundry. So he got an opportunity to try out there and work there. So he's been doing that. So that has been just such a godsend for us. So he's really loved that. But Thomas also didn't cope because, this is the thing, isn't it? Because of this social distancing. He had just started hugging people. With autism, we're not very emotional. We don't like to touch. And so Thomas had just got to the stage of really connecting with people physically. And then we had to say, no, you can't hug anymore. Stand back. No more hugging. And he's like, it's like so confusing. Yeah, we love it when he hugs. We love it when he hugs. No more hugging. You can't hug. Stand away, back away. Like, so confusing for us. But, mind-blowingly confusing for him. So he calls it the bloody virus. Excuse my French, but it's like a bloody virus. When's this bloody COVID? When's the bloody COVID go away?
That is funny.
And he's such a rule follower. So, sometimes when people come to, when we could start sort of seeing people again, when they come into our home, he goes, hi, nice to see you, but, COVID rules, I can't shake your hand. COVID rules, can't shake your hand.
There's so much honesty with Thomas, isn't there? Yeah. Julie, is he 20?
He's 19. He'll be 20 next year.
Yeah. So, Julie, you have started writing a book about your experience of autism, and I love the proposed title, which is called You're a Big Fat Penis Mum and Other Funny Stories of Living and Loving with Autism. So, tell me about the book.
It's kind of like that first 18 years of living and loving with autism, I read so many books when Thomas was diagnosed with autism and I tried to read so many books. You don't often have time to read the whole book, so I'd kind of grab a book and try to read it to get a gist of this journey and to learn from other people. And I guess in some of the books that I did read, I felt a little like these mothers were angels, and I'm not judging them or saying that their books weren't valuable, but I just felt like because I was in such a period of pain still with this journey, and it was so hard and I was struggling so much, and walls were being smashed around me and windows kicked in and swearing and I'm being called a big penis and spitting, and they made it and they were just seeing all the gifts in it. And so I just found that even reading those kind of books were making me feel like, oh, I'm hopeless. This is ridiculous. Why aren't I seeing all this? I just feel like it's drowning me. And so, but I'm glad I didn't write it at that time either. So I wouldn't have had time anyway. So I've left it to sort of this stage to write, he's got to adulthood. And I'm so glad I did because now I can actually see the gifts, but I still want to tell the real story at the time. So, that's where the big penis comes from because I went through a stage where I was always the big penis. I don't know why I was called the big penis. This is where you've got to have a sense of humour because this is where you've got to muscle up mentally. So while he's going, you're just a big penis, Mum. You're just a big penis, aren't you? You're just a big penis. I'm thinking to myself, I wouldn't mind one just quietly. And so, have a laugh, and I feel better, and I'm better at parenting. So I don't say that loud, but So this book is about, it's a compilation of all of the journey and looking at all of the issues and I guess the challenges with autism, you know, the school years, the sensory stuff, the behavioural stuff, telling the real and raw stories, the tough stories. But then I've progressed far enough forward in the journey to be able to, I think, give people hope so that if they're in the stage of their child not eating anything and throwing their meals up against walls when you're trying to get them to eat nice food because of their sensory issues, you know, Thomas, you know, you might have saw the post, but Thomas finally sat down, you know, the other night and said he wanted steak and vegetables. Now I nearly dropped to the floor and fainted. It was like a switch had been flicked, you know, and we kept offering all these different foods and we've seen a slow progression, but it's just like suddenly now he wants to eat everything that every adult is eating. And this is a little boy that would just eat sausages, noodles and cheese and pretty much nothing else, and then veggies wrapped in pastry. So I want to give people hope because I couldn't see that he would ever eat anything else. You know, I thought, you know, my poor child is going to be sick because he's not eating properly. He's going to be overweight and unhealthy. And so I hope I can give parents hope that if they're in the midst of the worst of it, number one, to find their humour in the journey, because I tell lots of stories where I do it with the humour attached, to allow yourself to be fascinated by the journey, to laugh and give yourself a break in it, know that it's okay to find laughter, and then the hope that don't ever lose hope of the possibilities of what these young people can achieve.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, in learning from you, especially because I know it will be very humorous, but about what parents and what kids go through that live with autism, I think it'll be really interesting. So we'll have to have a little update when it's
published.
Yeah. Now, I love your Facebook posts, and if I miss any, I'm always scrolling back through. So I just wanted, there were a few that I picked out last night, and I went from the top down. So I thought I'll just ask you about a few of your posts. Now, Joyce Dixon. So yes. Tell me about Joyce, because I loved that story.
Oh, you know, and this is the thing, Kelly. You know, so often when I do these posts about these ordinary, which can be considered ordinary encounters, really, but we're not always watching for them or grabbing them or going deep into them. You know, we're often walking by these moments that could impact our life quite greatly, you know, if we would just stop and notice them. And once again, in this pause, this pandemic pause, this is a great time to dive deep into any kind of moments like that and notice the difference they can make, these ordinary people in these ordinary moments. And I think sometimes, you know, this was this reflection for me through this time too, is that I don't have to wait till I've got a main stage in a hall or in a corporate room or an event venue to make a difference. We all have a stage every day to make a difference in the world, just with an ordinary encounter. Now, it may not go viral or it may not be on morning TV, but that doesn't make it any less important to us or to the world around us and the people around us. Mm. You know, the number one thing I think we all want to do is to leave the world a better place and somehow make a difference in our circle of influence. And Joyce is one of the ways that we can do that. So I was just walking along our boardwalk here, and there's an older lady, she might not let me call her that, but a lady who was older than me coming towards me, and she had a walker. And her walker was all dressed up in these flowers. It was kind of, the walker was dressed up, she was dressed up, and here she is out for a morning walk. And so I walked past, smiled. And this is the thing, most of us would walk past, maybe smile, but not take it any further. And so the challenge is every now and again to stop and make a connection. And in this time of physical and social distancing, I think we've got to reach further across that chasm almost to connect with people. So, and I actually did pass her, and then I ran back to her. And I said, as I walked past her, I made eye contact and I said, well, look at you and your walker all dressed up this morning. Don't you look great? Good morning to you. And she said, morning. And I smiled and she said, and it made you smile, so our work here is done.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yep. So I ran back then and said, Joyce, can I get a photo of you? And I'd love to tell a little story about you. And I told her what I did. And I said, I'm sure my tribe would be very much inspired by what you're doing. And I think you've got a message to give everybody. So she went on then to tell me how a little bit of her story, that she's got these two knees that need replacing. She's waiting for that to be done. She's got a degenerative spine disorder, and she actually lives with chronic pain. So for her to be out there walking is a painful thing. But she said, the flowers on my walker inspire me every day to keep taking that one step after another. And she said, and then I want those flowers to make other people smile, because then I feel like I've given something back to the people around me, and then they'll smile back at me and I get something back too. And that really is how it works. That is our work here on earth. You know, we often think that our work is our title, but that is our work, is to connect to fellow humans in everyday moments and leave them a little bit better than when we found them. And that's what Joyce did to me that day. And I wanted to give her that gift back by sharing her story with my audience. And, of course, everybody loved it. So it was...
Yeah. Julie, one thing I found, because I've been at home, you know, we live miles from in the middle of nowhere. And I went down to Brisbane a couple of weeks ago to spend with my daughter Lily, who couldn't go back into boarding. So I was a day mum for a whole week, which I really loved and enjoyed. But one thing I had to remember was, you know, the first day I was down there, I was walking along and avoiding people and I had my head down. And I suddenly thought, oh, no, I can actually still look at people and smile and talk to them.
It's, Kelly, that is
it was
so
such true. A weird thing, because I hadn't been here.
That is so true. I so agree with you. And because you haven't been around people, but at the beginning here, that's exactly what we were all doing too. And then I did the same thing. It was about the first week and I looked up and started going, morning, morning, morning. Because I thought, oh, my God, we've forgotten that we can still, and if anything, we need to do that more because we're physically distanced. But, you know, the other thing that I did yesterday, I did this post on Instagram, and I don't know if this is on your stories, but I did this post on Instagram, is that I was going for a walk. Oh, a lot of things happen when I'm out for a walk, but I was going for a walk to the same place, and this beach ball bounded past me, and I didn't see where it came from, and onto the beach. And I was on the boardwalk, and then a couple of other walkers noticed as well. And we all kind of looked at each other as if to go, where did that come from? Kept walking, came back. The beach ball had found its way into the waves and was playing in the waves. And I started thinking, marine life, not good if that ball busts and the plastic. So I go and grab the ball, and I'm trying to get the plug out to deflate it and put it in the bin. But the plug wouldn't come out. But you know me, I hear whisperings from the universe, whether it's your intuition or whatever. And this whisper said, that's not what you really want to do with this ball. You know what you want to do with it. So I dropped it on the ground and I started kicking it as I was walking. Well, it turned out to be a social experiment because, you know, some people were doing the old, oh, come on, I'll go, yeah. And other people do, come on, bend it like Beckham. And then other people are walking past going, I'm just going for a quiet walk. Don't want to know about your ball. Don't want to know about your ball. And I think one guy gave me this look like, what the hell are you doing? Don't you know there's a freaking virus?
that's so funny. Actually, Julie, I want to ask you, because you live your life by faith and messages and feathers, but I really am interested about the golf ball that landed at your feet. With the Kent and the phone number.
Oh, that was a boy. It was a a crab pot boy.
I saw the photo and I thought
it does look like a golfer when you think about it, but no, it was actually a lot bigger, but it was a boy. So yes, that was a really interesting. So you know, through this time, you know, again, I've kind of been challenged. I go on my own little journey, and you know that I've seen feathers since I lost my husband. He kind of would often show up in feathers for me. And I was feeling a little bit, again, heavy with worry about the financial situation with no work. And I also was working really hard. I had an investment property that got trashed. And so, you know, you just had a little bit of weight, and with Thomas's anxiety. And so I'd sort of been sitting there that day again, and I'd been really focusing on trusting that belief that the universe supports me, it's not out to get me, it's not against me. And so although my name is Julie Cross, my married name is actually Kent. So I work under my maiden name because I had my business first. And so my married name is Julie Kent. So obviously my husband's name was Raymond Kent. And so anyway, and so I still see feathers, but here by the beach, obviously there's a lot of seagulls, so there's a lot of feathers, so you can't really count all the feathers as being especially your feather. And so this morning I had done lots of meditation around, you know, my angels and belief again, and feeling supported by the universe and trying to release all the worry and just having trust and belief. And I'd gone for this walk in the morning, and yeah, I was walking along the boardwalk again, and there on the sand right beside me on the boardwalk was a boy that had obviously been at one stage attached to a crab bot with the words Kent written on it in big letters. And I thought, well, could you get a clearer sign than that? Mm-hmm. I think that was for me. And then my partner actually then said to me, he said, well, that's kind of like, you know, your angel, Flash, saying to you, my late husband, and your angel saying to you, know, we're here to keep you afloat. You can mm-hmm. just relax and we'll keep you afloat. You know, now not everybody believes in stuff like that, and that's okay. Like, it's okay if people want to challenge me on that and say, well, maybe a feather's there because the freaking bird flew by, or it is just a boy that somebody lost and there's a lot of cats. You know, yeah. People can, you know, that's fine. But if you choose to believe in that, you know, people sort of say that there's no magic in the world anymore. The magic's there. You've just got to choose to believe in it. And so it doesn't... How does it hurt me to believe in that? How does it hurt anybody if I choose to get comfort from feeling like that that's a message that life is supporting me in some way and buoying me and making and helping me to feel better? That's going to be better for my family. It's going to be better for my mental and emotional health, my spiritual health. It's going to be better for my relationship, for my clients, for anyone I connect with. So I think we need to allow ourselves to see the magic in everyday life.
Mm-hmm. Julie, another post that I really loved was the one about glancing back every now and again. And we were chatting before about Condalilla Falls, which is where you're walking. It's just the most beautiful place to go for a walk out in nature and challenge yourself a bit. But anyway, tell me about that post.
Yeah, so I just think every now and again, you know, it was a day I was driving and I looked in the rear vision mirror and there was this beautiful view. And, you know, we often talk about, oh, you don't, you know, you can't, you reach your goals by focusing on what's behind you. And, you know, but I do, and of course you don't want to live your life in the past either. But, you know, it is okay to look back every now and again and see how far you've come. And, you know, and certainly in writing this book with Thomas of that Living and Loving of the First 18 Years, I've done a lot of looking back and reflection into his past with these stories. And I've got to tell you, there are times where I you know, lean over in almost physical pain because some of the memories are so painful and I go, gosh. But, oh, the joy I get now when I see how far we've come. And the only way I get to make that comparison is to reflect and to look back. And so we have to allow ourselves every now and again to look back so that we can celebrate how far we've come. But the other thing about looking back, I think, is knowing that all of those events in your past made you who you are today. You know, they made you who you are, and that's to be celebrated. So I think it's important to allow yourself every now and again to glance back into the past and see how far you've come, to see how you've grown, and to celebrate all of the journey that got you here.
No, that was really inspiring, that one. Also, the one about the passion fruit and never judging a book by its cover, which is quite apt because last week I used that exact quote in relation to my last week's interview. So tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I just cut this passion fruit one day, you know, and it was a passion fruit, you know, those passion fruits that... It's not the shiny passion fruit. It's a passion fruit that's been in the bowl for a while or under the vine and you picked it up and she's looking pretty like she's all dried up and there's not much in her. But then I cut it open. Oh, she was juicy and sweet and the pulp was beautiful and yum. It was just the best passion fruit I think I'd ever eaten. And it just I thought it was a great analogy. As I get older and I'm now, you know, in my 50s and, you know, I'm a great advocate for body image and for loving ourselves. And I think that we are doing a great disservice to our society and to our young women as women when we do not age lovingly and we do not age loving ourselves. I think that we are going through an era where we are trying to cure aging and enduring it. And I think we need to be held accountable. I think we need to reflect on that and say every time we do not love ourselves as we age, and I'm challenged on it, don't get me wrong, it doesn't mean I'm not challenged. Someone said to me, Julie, will you be getting work done? How could I do that when I advocate what I advocate? No, I will not be doing that. Yes, I do colour my hair and I started colouring it for fun and now, you know, I'm just starting to let my grey come through here. No, I can't do that. That doesn't mean that I don't look at photos of myself and go, whoa. And, oh, I love myself. I love myself. I love myself. I love myself. But, But no, because every time we do that, subliminally we're saying to our young women that this is not good enough and we have to fix it. It doesn't need to be fixed. We need to be loving ourselves and celebrating ourselves through aging. And I think that passion fruit just did that to me, even though it was a little wrinkled and old and dried up on the outside. It was still so beautiful and rich and sweet and amazing and had so much to offer on the inside. And that is really who we are. It's that comes from the inside that is who we are that lights up the world. Marianne Williamson has a quote that says that as we age, beauty steals inwards. And that's kind of what that passion fruit reminded me of. And perhaps that passion fruit got sweeter as it actually got older. So we get wiser. We have so much to offer as we age because of that reflection and looking back, because we have the ability to do that and have learnt the lessons. And so let us celebrate that. We are so much more than just this, so much more.
And I think, Julie, it goes so much deeper. More deeply than just aging. It got, you know, anybody who might look a little bit different or it looks different to us on the outside, you really, you know, that they can still be kind and beautiful. And you have to look past what's on the outside to the inside, because beauty is within.
Absolutely. And you know, that takes a lot of work in our society. That actually takes a lot of daily work for me too, for everybody, because we are bombarded continually with messages that are subliminally, subconsciously in our heads that are constantly telling us that it's otherwise. That you know, and look how bizarre it is. You know, suddenly big lips are the thing. You know, when did that become a thing? You know, who decided that? And eyebrows. Suddenly eyebrows are front and centre. Eyebrows are taking a stage, you know. But that will all change. In 10 years it'll be something else, you know. Once there was no booty, now the booty's back, you know. Who decides all of this? And, you know, and so you will never catch up. And that's why we must, and every time we do that, we lose a little bit of ourselves. We lose our confidence, our courage, our authenticity, what makes us real and honest and raw. You know, we've really got to work hard to just love ourselves, and we can't give anyone else what we're not giving ourselves. So while we're judging ourselves, we will be judging other people. And so the best gift we can give to everybody else is to start accepting ourselves first, and then it will be easier to accept others and their differences. And because you're right, everybody's got something magnificent to offer. And, you know, we are so much more than that. You know, there is this story that I may not have told you before, but my husband had a pacemaker in after he had his stroke. And one day, there were a number of times that his heart stopped. And one day he'd walked into the house and his heart stopped, which means obviously for that second he dies. You know, he hit the floor and his head split open. And in that moment he was dead, and, you know, in that second. And I remember and then his pacemaker started his heart. But I remember looking at him in that second where his heart had stopped and it never looked like him. I remember looking at him and going, Where did Flash go? My husband nicknamed Flash. Where did he go? When his pacemaker started, his heart, and, you know, he came back into his body and started to wake up, he looked like him again. We are more than our body, you know. We are so much more. It is our personality and our soul and our spirit and our joy, and that's what makes this physical part of us come alive. And that was such a profound example for me that I'll never forget.
Oh, yeah. Julie, you mentioned before about your investment house, and I have a lot of favourite stories of yours from your Facebook page, but that last one, I think it was on the 18th of April, if anybody wants to go back and have a look, but it just had me in fits. But it also had such an important message, and you talk about Eric, your next door neighbour, an old mate from across the road.
Yeah, that's right.
And all the shit that happened. So can you just tell everybody about that, because that is just gold.
Oh, well, I'll do my best. That poured out of me that day because I was sat down.
Well, yes. I loved it.
Oh, what a
joke. But I loved the outcome and what... the wheels that were set in motion. So,
yeah, So we had this investment. I had this investment property, and look, it's not in the best area, but that's really to me irrelevant. It's still a home if you want to make it a home, and we had these bad tenants in it. And yes, they trashed the property. We had to evict them, so they trashed the property and then left a whole pile of their shit sitting out the front. And I'm talking trailer loads of shit sitting out the front. We took days and days and days to clean up all of their shit. You know, people should just clean up their own shit. But no, you leave all your shit out the front and expect me to clean up your shit. So we cleaned up all their shit. And then old mate next door, he's got a whole lot of shit in his house too. There's shit everywhere. He's got shit all over the place. And so, and then he's over when I'm cleaning up our shit. He's over helping me clean up my shit. And it's really nice that he's helpful, but I'm thinking you should go back over and clean up your own shit, because you'd get your shit sorted out, would be nice as well. And then Eric across the other side, and he's lived there for years, and his shit looks pretty good, but he's helped me clean up my shit because he wants a nice neighbour, because good people usually look after their place and keep their shit good. So finally we got all our shit sorted out. It started looking good. And then our old mate next door gets evicted because, yeah, if you're not going to, you know, the chances are if you're not looking after your shit, cleaning your shit up out the front, you probably haven't got your shit sorted out the back. So he wasn't paying his rent either. So anyway, he got evicted, and so suddenly our two places look good. And then I start noticing that everyone's starting to clean up their shit. Next thing you know, the neighbours are cleaning up their shit too, and everyone should get their shit sorted out. And this is one of these things with this COVID time. You've got to clean up your shit. You've got to start there. It's a basic foundation. But what was happening? Everyone was taking their shit from their house and dumping out at Lifeline bins. That's not cleaning up your shit. That's taking your shit out somewhere else and expecting someone else to clean up your shit. You know, and I just think that that's a great analogy again, and I'm sorry about the shit word all the time, but we've just got to get the basics sorted out. You know, no matter, I've been to places in third world countries where they live on dirt floors, but they still sweep their dirt floors. It's a basic foundation of success. Otherwise, you are building... trying to build strong lives on shaky foundations. You know, no matter how small a place you live in, you clean that up, you keep it looking great, no matter how little you got, you treat it with respect, no matter where you live, if you're paying, you treat it with respect, and then you will attract better things in your life. People wonder how I get to look at this beautiful view I get, because I enjoyed every single view along the way. And a lot of them were views exactly like where my investment property is, because that's where I started. So you clean up where you are now and look after what's in your environment and in your space, and you will attract more into your life. It's just a basic law of life that we've got to do that. And I sometimes think we forget giving these lessons to our young people. So it was just amazing to watch this happen in this house, is that as we cleaned up all of our stuff, you could see it inspired the street to start look better. Now, since then, I've also got a new fence put on because the fence was all falling down. So we got the new fence done. And, you know, while those fences were there, three other people came and got a card off him, and then the guy next door got his front fence done as well. So it just takes somebody to get it started sometimes too. You know, in Rwanda, and this is what I didn't include in that story because I think that this Rwanda story sort of deserved a stage of its own, but it is relevant. In Rwanda, when I was there a couple of years ago, now Rwanda went through one of the worst genocides in history, where neighbour set against neighbour, and you know, literally they were hacking each other apart because this hatred had been set forth in them from the government about tribes hating tribes, etc. So this is a nation that is in healing. This is a country that is healing after genocide. Now, they're still under a dictatorship, but this is amazing thinking. So Rwanda is one of the cleanest countries in Africa. It is just, I was just gobsmacked at how clean it is considering the rest of the countries I've been through in Africa. But they have a policy. There's a no paper, no plastic bag policy. They've been doing that for years, so far advanced than us. The other thing is that they have a national cleanup day every month where neighbours must all come out and help neighbours. You've got to clean up your own property and you all help each other to clean up your space. That's called pride. It's personal pride. It's pride of area. It's pride of country. And so they understand the power of that, and it also creates community connection, which is healing, which is healing. So it's just much bigger than taking some crap to the dump. It's much bigger than that. And so that was what I really got out of it. This is the thing, isn't there? There's lessons everywhere. You know, there's just lessons everywhere. So as we're hauling all this shit out, feeling like, you know, instead of just getting weighed down by that, you start to allow yourself to see the lessons in it. It becomes really motivating then.
Oh, there's nothing like cleaning up and having mess in front of you and then it all be gone. And
you feel light, don't you? You feel light.
It's good for your soul. Look, it's really good for your soul. And, you know, probably the fella across the road, he probably didn't even see all his crap that he had around. And you know, that's why he would have been over there helping.
Yeah, I know. So interesting, you know. And he, you know, and look, and, you know, he came over and it was lovely that he wanted to help me. And I was like, this is really not. But it was interesting. One day we're over there mowing and like his lawn needed mowing and he needed whippersnippering and he's helping me whippersnip. And I go, I'm looking at him thinking, and I kind of said, do you want me to help you now? And he went, oh. And so he went over and started whippersnippering his place.
That is so funny. Oh, gosh. Now, Julie, when you're allowed to kick off again, you're heading out west with your regional road show. So tell me what you've got planned and where you're planning on going.
Okay. So it's still kind of in the workings of, you know, where am I going to go and how am I going to do it in sort of little groups, because I had a great – I sort of put it out there because we're at a stage now, are we opening up? We're opening. A lot of speakers kind of aren't on stage again yet. And so I rang some venues and sort of said, what are you thinking? And so obviously it's all subject to where we're at with this virus and what the government regulations are and rules. But you know what? I think that we just have to get it started. And I think that there's a lot of communities that are ready to get together. So obviously at all venues, we'll be following all of the rules and numbers will be depend on the size of the venues and how many where people were allowed in and all that sort of thing. But the idea is that I will probably do it in three different areas and maybe sort of do an area from, you know, Mackay down and sort of that area and go to some inland areas that are interested to Brisbane and then perhaps go to Cairns and sort of work my way down from up there and just travel inland to anywhere that is interested in having me come. So if you are interested, then contact me and let me know. And if I can get the people in the room, then I'll come. It's as simple as that. And so I think it'll be a kind of a combination of my general inspirational entertaining show, but we'll do a kind of adults only theme to the public event. So lots of humour. We'll be talking, because I think in this time, as I said before, that mental and emotional health is a big priority through times like this. And it always is, obviously, with our regional areas when you guys go through so much with regards to, you know, droughts and then floods and everything in between. So lots of stories that will have people laughing, but also with messages, resilience and hope and courage and all those kinds of things. A feel good evening for men and women. So, and then what I'll also do is once I confirm the actual venue that I'm coming to and the places I'm coming to, I will then put it out there that I'll have a couple of days either side so that if there's a school that might want to come and I can do a presentation to teachers and students or something like that, you know, or if there's business that wants to get me in particular, then I'll kind of put it out there and say that I'm in this spot. I'm in Moranbah for 2 days. You know, this is the show. Does anyone want me to come and spend time with them one-on-one? And so we'll work it out like that. So it's a work in progress, but I'm thinking September, October is my vision. So I'm hoping that within the next couple of weeks, I'll have my first sort of, mini tour out there, and then we'll take it from there. And it'll just be that there'll be links on my website, on my Facebook page, and people will book online.
Well, I would highly recommend anybody going because it's your shows are just awesome, Julie, just like you. Now, how long do we have to wait for the book?
Oh, look, I'm hoping, you know, and I've really got to get myself going if I'm going to commit to this, but I would have loved to have it for that tour, for that. So I hope that I can get it out and sort of speed up the process of editing and printing. But I have got another book. If I haven't got that one out in time, I've got my other book that's already printed that I will have with me as well. So I will be racing to try and have it out in time for the tour. Might have to bring Thomas with me.
Oh, poor Thomas. Oh, gosh, he'll be the star of the show. Yeah. Julie, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you. You always make me feel happy.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure speaking to you and all of your tribe. So thanks for having me very much.
Thanks, Julie. We'll catch up again soon.
I look forward to that. Thanks, Kelly. See you later. Bye.
Thanks for listening to my interview. If you'd like to hear more from Life Journey, subscribe to our podcast and we'll let you know when we have new interviews coming up.